Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you can find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we talk about the future, and we're not afraid to give the straight scoop about what's going to be happening in the world very soon and what's happening in the world right now. And that straight scoop can be summed up as follows. If you're not excited about the future, then you're not paying attention. We think that we stand on the brink of an incredibly bright future, if we play our cards right, a future that most of us haven't even imagined, much less dared to hope for. And it's a future that we're all very much going to want to live to see. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me, as always, here in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. We need to take that slogan. If you're not excited about the future, you're not paying attention. We need to get that on a T-shirt or something. I love
that.
We
do. Well, as a little bit of background to the listeners, you have actually designed a prototype T-shirt, and I got so involved in tweaking that over the week that I never sent my response to you back. But I think it was a good start, and I think we're well on our way to having if you're not excited about the future, you're not paying attention T-shirt developed here one of these days.
Yeah, I look forward to that. That'd be great.
A freebie for the guests. Yeah, I think we need to put that on coffee mugs, license plates. What am I saying? What do you call
vanity
it?
Plates or something, huh?
That would be a kind of a lengthy vanity plate, I think. But
yeah, true.
Bumper sticker. That was the term I was looking for. Thank you.
Yeah.
So Stephen is with us, and our chat host, Michael Darling, AWOL this evening. So we're going to put out an APB on him here pretty soon. But Michael, if you're listening, sign in on the chat room or call on into the show. Either way, we'd love to have you be part of our broadcast this evening. Now, speaking of people being part of our broadcast this evening, Stephen, I'm going to jump right into a quick interview.
Told
you that that we have a surprise guest this evening, and we're going to talk a little bit about basically it's some technology buying tips. And I don't know if you saw an article on Instapundit, would have been, a couple of weeks ago. It was a link from him, and it was actually an Amazon page where people were talking about this $499 Ethernet cable.
Yeah, I saw that. And I guess the question is, does it work any better than, the $20 or $15 Ethernet cable?
Well, the consensus is no, it does not. And that Glenn's take on it was for when audiophile is synonymous with sucker is how he described it. And if you follow that link, we'll put the link up in the show notes. If you follow that link, some of the comments that some of the people left on that Amazon page are just among the funniest things I've ever read. But basically, they're selling a cable they could be selling for, say, $5. They're selling it for $499. And that's why our special guest is with us this evening to talk about an experience that she has had this weekend very much along those lines. Our guest is a telecommunications professional with a background in law, but more to our purposes tonight, she is a world-class shopper and the toughest negotiator I've ever met in my entire life. She is well known to Speculist readers as the Specky Wife, and she has listened to Blog Talk Radio, although this is her first time calling in. My wife, Suraya Yahya. Welcome to Fast Forward Radio.
Thank you. How are you?
Well, this is exciting, Phil. I've met Suraya on a couple of occasions, and get her on the show is great.
Yeah, this is kind of a coup, having her on the program with us this evening. Now, let's set the stage a little bit and talk about what we went through this weekend. So I'll fill in a little bit of background, and then you jump in when the time is right to tell what we felt we eventually had to do about it. But basically, we went out to buy an HDTV system over the weekend, and we already had a smaller HDTV, and we were actually going through this process of returning it and getting a new one to replace it, and because we decided to go a little bit bigger, and then also get a completely new one for upstairs. So, Soraya, go ahead and tell what happened next.
Well, yeah, so we went into the store, and all we needed to do was to get an upgrade on the TV downstairs, so a little bit bigger TV, wasn't too expensive, and then a new TV for the upstairs. And since we've got this new house, we were going to get a new TV for the upstairs. And we figured we'd done the research, we'd looked at what we'd liked, and all we were going to do was get a couple of TVs. But we walk out of there with the guy having sold us a bunch of cables and a power surge protector and a wall mount, and all those things in total came to about maybe $800. And I was just blown away. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, so instead of just having the price for the two TVs, we were spending an extra $800, which the guy insisted we needed and wouldn't let us leave the store without it.
Yeah. So as we're coming out of the very inaccurately named Best Buy, as we're trying to get checked out of this place, this guy has loaded up this cart. You know, we got your two TVs coming, but here you're gonna need this wall mount. You're going to need this.
You're going to need the extended warranty too. I'm sure he tried to sell you that, right?
Well, as a matter of fact, they were. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. He was going to sell us the extended warranty, and he was trying to sell us this thing called calibration, which is where, and we just couldn't believe this. It makes the black on your TV look even blacker.
Okay.
So for $300, they'll have some guy come tune your TV so black looks blacker.
All right.
So he's loaded up. He's got us this surge protector, this wall mount, and he shows me this cable. And he says, "Now you're going to need this cable to hook the TV up to the DirecTV receiver." And because it's in-wall rated, you have to get this kind. You accept no substitutes. And I look at the price of it, and I'm like, $90. And I remembered the Glenn Reynolds thing, and I said, that's okay. Never mind on that. I'll hold off on getting that cable. And so he backs off from that, but then he gives us this other cable, and he says, oh, okay, but you do need something to connect the TV to the Blu-ray machine. Oh, we also bought a Blu-ray machine. A Blu-ray player. He says, you're going to need this one. So this is just the basic bare-bones cable. And I'm so distracted. We're buying a phone at the same time, too. I'm looking at all the different things that I don't think anything of it. But we get out of Best Buy. We come home, and we start kind of just looking through the receipt. And how much did that second bare-bones, supposedly less expensive cable come to?
$140.
You're kidding. So he took away the $90 cable and gave you a $140 cable.
Correct.
He slipped us a shorter cable, not in wall rated, that cost $50 more. Okay?
Oh, man.
So here we got this $140 cable. We had the wall mount was, how much was that thing? About $180.
The wall mount, yeah, it was $180, and then the surge protector was like $170.
Right. So I immediately just go looking for cables, and I find a cable that will do the exact same thing. Actually, I find the 10-foot in-wall mounted cable, you know, it's rated, it's okay to stick it inside a wall.
Yeah.
There is a difference between cables to that extent. So I found a 10-footer for, I think it was $6, and then I found a 6-footer that we could use to connect the Blu-ray to the TV for about $4. So,
wow. You talk about a margin. They make a killing on that, don't they? And it's entirely, you know, just not selling it to people that just don't know better.
Right.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, for one thing, if you're buying like a 40-inch TV, you numbers aren't making sense to you anymore anyway after a while. They kind of wear you down, and then they're loading up your cart with all this stuff. And, yeah, they end up charging you $230 for cables that you could buy online for $10. Now, I don't begrudge a retail outlet for charging more than online costs. I understand why that would be the case. But not, you know, 1,000% more.
Yeah.
That seemed outrageous to me. So
they're just sticking it to the rubes, then. You know, I mean, they're really people who don't know better. They're just getting to them. And fortunately, y'all didn't know better. And I guess y'all are going to take those cables back now.
Well, now you're jumping to the happy conclusion of the story here. So what we did was while I'm on Amazon, I start looking at some of these other things. I found the exact same surge protector that we said. How much did that thing cost?
$170.
$170. Found that for about, I don't know, $65. I mean, it's not just a surge protector. It's a whole, like, home entertainment surge protector unit. And the wall mount, which cost how much originally?
I think that was $150.
Yeah, about $150. Found that for about $75. I mean, and I'm talking the exact same components, okay? This wasn't even just comparable. These were the exact same components. And I'm Amazon Prime. So I can get all this stuff shipped to my house second day at no charge. And
I love Amazon Prime, by the way. That paid for itself like in the first week that I got it right before Christmas, and now it's just money in the bank every time I use it now.
Absolutely, Amazon Prime is the greatest. So basically, I went ahead and ordered all those, and tell the rest of the story.
And I went back to Best Buy and politely let them know that they were going to take that stuff back. And they kind of looked at me, and I think they figured that I was in no mood to be messed with because...
I can believe that.
Because he hardly ever asked me any questions. He just kind of looked at me, looked at the cables. I think he had an idea of what was going on, and he kind of went, yes, ma'am, and... refunded it our $800.
I think he must have understood that the gig was up, you know.
right.
He figured out that y'all had figured it out. That's funny.
Go ahead.
But you know, I was just saying, while we were there, we saw, you know, several people whom we know from church, and I was just wondering as we were leaving that store, you know, how many innocent people get ripped off at stores like this.
Well, I'm sure it's not just Best Buy, but I mean, it's just any time that you have a situation where, you know, particularly with something that's technical like this, there's just so many people that don't know, and when you don't know in something like that, they can really stick it to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think you got a situation here where maybe the surge protector and the wall mount, those were just, I mean, you know, I might not have been so annoyed about those. Had it not been for the 1,000% markup on the cable, but when you see that, you go, okay, so this is like the popcorn of Best Buy, you know that the movie theaters make all their money
exactly.
off popcorn. I'm thinking Best Buy, they must make all their money off cables, but to just glibly upsell me, you know, to a $140 cable after I had said I didn't want to buy an expensive cable was too much. That was over the top. So we decided
the extended warranty is another thing that they really make a lot of money on. I mean, if they can sell a person on that, then that's almost like, you know, just free money. You know,
exactly right.
They don't. It rarely are those things used, and if they are, then it's not going to be as much as what. You know, was spent on it. Anyway, I had an engineer tell me one time about a rule called the 90-50 rule. Have y'all ever heard about that?
I've not heard that, no.
It says that 90, his 90-50 rule was basically you can get 90% results from 50% effort. You know, and so,
right.
I guess the same goes for buying things. If you have the opportunity to buy something really cheap or something middle of the road or something very expensive to fill some need, then you want to go middle of the road usually. If you go cheap, you won't get something that's good enough. And if you go too expensive, then you're just going to get ripped off.
Right.
It's usually the middle of the road product that's the best bet. And of course there's exceptions to that, but
Well, the thing you have to keep in mind about an HDMI cable or any digital cable is we're not talking about a stereo speaker cable. We're not talking about analog here where, you know, it's like some metals will be more conductive of sound and electricity, and you're actually going to get a better sound out of the cable depending on how well it's manufactured. I mean, stereo cables are a huge ripoff anyway, but at least there is some principle behind that. With a digital cable, either the signal comes through, in which case it's the signal, or it does not. You know, I mean, it's just that simple. There is no such thing as like a snowy signal coming over a digital cable. It's either going to come across or it's not going to come across. So it's a real.
Well, I guess I should ask if have y'all hooked it up? Has it come across? Have y'all seen the picture yet?
We have not. The Geek Squad is coming on Saturday to actually install all these components.
I hope it'll be awesome.
Fortunately, Amazon Prime, they'll all be here by Wednesday, so we'll be.
Looks like we got got another caller, Phil.
All right. Well,
our other surprise guest number two.
I'm going to thank you so much for joining us this evening, Soraya, and we hope you'll be on the program again with us again to warn consumers about other pitfalls.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right.
Thank you, Soraya.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. So let's bring on guest number two, Phil.
Okay, before we do that, let me just say real quick that this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network, Phil and Stephen, talking about various subjects about the future. Stephen, introduce our guest.
Okay. Tobias Buckel, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Can you guys hear me okay?
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Hi, Tobias. Welcome to the program.
Thanks.
I guess I should introduce our guest by telling our audience that he's been on Fast Forward Radio a couple of times before. He is a science fiction novelist. He writes what he describes as Caribbean steampunk science fiction. Is that correct, Tobias?
Sure, Caribbean science fiction is what I'm all about.
That's right, and
own that niche, man. You totally
that is his. And I believe you're about to come out with your third novel. Is that right, Tobias?
Correct. The third one comes out this August, and will be called Sly Mongoose. Comes out August 19th.
Well, we'll hope to get you back on the show so we can talk about that when it comes out. But Tobias went and saw Hellboy this weekend, the sequel, Hellboy 2. Is it the Golden Army?
Yes, it's the Golden Army. Was out, I think it was Friday night to see it.
And I got to see it as well. Phil, you have not seen it, right?
I have not yet seen it. But that's okay. You can spoil that for me. That's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I wanted to bring in. You know, Tobias had seen it and he had some strong opinions about it. And I'm glad to get him on the show to share that with us. What'd you think, Tobias?
I rather enjoyed it. I thought what I particularly enjoyed and what I wrote. On my blog was that the spectacle was quite amazing. I think it. I think he may have out Star Wars bar Star Wars. The scene where they go through the troll market is rather amazing. I kind of wish I had a pause button while I was sitting there watching it because it was pretty spectacular, very visually arresting.
I agree completely. It was. And it went on and on and on. You know, the Star Wars cantina scene, it blew us away back when, you know, in the 1970s when we first saw it. But if you go back and look at it now, it just lasted, you know, it was a brief interlude in the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
But this marketplace where it had all these different fantastical creatures, it just seemed, I mean, that segment just seemed to go on and on, and it was so much inventiveness in that.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I was worried about was when I saw the previews for it, it kept emphasizing the fact that this was the director of Pan's Labyrinth, and I wondered why they kept referencing that instead of Hellboy 1. But I think what they did was they really let Del Toro go to town with the special effects that he wanted to do and the sort of aesthetic feel that he wanted, which is slightly different. He got to do more amazing, you know, creatures, more sort of Del Toro-like interactions with those creatures than he has done in previous movies, the previous Hellboy, which is actually on TV right now as we're speaking. I'm watching it. So it's
outstanding.
It is really definitely by the maker of Pan's Labyrinth, not necessarily Hellboy 1. He really, they unleashed him a bit. So it's really quite spectacular.
I think he earned that with the first one. It was obvious that he had, you know, he had a lot more to give, but he was a little bit constrained, I believe, in the first one. You know, the other surprise in the movie was Abe Sapien. He was kind of a supporting character in the first movie. I mean, he's the fish guy, okay?
Right.
And in the second movie, he really stepped out, didn't he? He became a very important character.
They definitely gave him more, I would have to say, more play. He had more critical part to play in the plot than in the previous movie.
Yeah. He also got to the actor got to speak his own lines in this one. They had dubbed the entire, you know, everything that he did in the first movie was dubbed by the actor who plays Niles in Frasier.
Yes.
Was the voice of Abe Sapien in the first movie, but this time they allowed the actor to do it, and he was just outstanding.
I think he did a good job. He did a real good job.
Yeah.
So overall, what's our thinking now? So Hellboy 2 is keeping us keeping the great summer movie alive, or
You know, we've had a great run. We've got, you know, we had Iron Man, we had the rebooted Hulk, which I really enjoyed, and now we had a rather good Hellboy. So I think it's been a really nice summer for those of us who enjoy comic books, graphic novels, science fiction fun. It's so far no major horrible disappointments. I think the plot of Hellboy 2 was a little less as strong as the spectacle was. I definitely think it was really there were some spots that were slightly uneven, not as amazing as the spectacle. But I don't know if that was the spectacle completely overriding the plot, you know, and me waiting for it to go up a notch. But I'm really looking forward to seeing The Hobbit as done by Del Toro, because I think his sense of amazing spectacle, which he has, above and beyond his plot ability, combined with the great plot of The Hobbit, which is one of my favorite books, I think it gives him a really great map to put his sense of his aesthetic world building and ability to show amazing things on screen together. So I'm actually kind of like a lot more positive about The Hobbit than I was before.
Well, that's neat because I noticed in some of the plot elements in this Hellboy, it seemed to me were lifted straight from Tolkien.
Hmm.
It just seemed like and I don't want to give too much
for
that
example.
Away. For example, no, we have
spoilers coming, everybody.
We have elves here. They're not the same kind of elves as what you see in Tolkien by any means, but I don't know what it was that necessarily brought to mind that. But I guess it's the same epic scope. We're talking about something from the beginning, you know, from the foundation of the world, conflict that, you know, from that far back resonating even now. And
well,
I guess...
What you're saying, I can really see what you're saying.
Yeah, and so maybe he was playing with some of those elements in preparation. But I'm looking forward to that too. I hope he doesn't feel too constrained by the fact that we all know The Hobbit.
To riff off of what you were just saying, I think one of the remarkable aspects of Hellboy 2 is that it takes on a much more mythic quality. Hellboy 1 is very much sort of a second world fantasy. Much more interested in, it's got a little hints of Lovecraftian, it's a sort of, a hidden world fantasy, whereas Hellboy 2 really goes with the myth and legend from before time coming all the way through to affect us.
Right. I was just going to say, it makes me look forward to Hellboy 3, because Hellboy 3 is... it's inevitable now. I mean, Hellboy 2 stands alone and it's a great story on its own. But obviously, they begin to lay the foundation of what the Hellboy character is and what he means to the world in the first movie. But they played it strong in the second movie, and makes you wonder how in the world they're going to resolve, you know, who Hellboy is. You know, he's this creature that's meant to be evil, but obviously he's trying to be good. And how that's going to be resolved, I think that has to be the story, I suppose, of the third movie, because they sure have been playing that up.
Yeah.
They could complete the trilogy with that. But, oh well. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Tobias.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
One thing I observed from the first movie is that... Hellboy doesn't seem to have a diabolical bone in his body, right? Did the gene skip a generation or something, right? I mean, he's a big, tough, mean guy, but he's what I mean? There's nothing satanic or evil about him, right? He's just gruff, I think, is about the the worst thing you can say about him. But so you're saying in the second movie and moving on into the series that maybe they explore that side of him a little further, the fact that he is theoretically evil, right? I mean, or at least that's what he springs from.
Yeah, that's what he springs from. And that's mentioned a couple of times, but it's almost as if, you know, it's an aside, I guess. And it was used by one of the main characters in trying to tempt him again, as it was in the first movie. Mm-hmm. And so it just makes me think that they'll have to make some resolution in the third movie. But
certainly looks like that's the direction that they're going and playing a little bit more with the mythology of Hellboy.
Who, as far as the creature effects go, Tobias, who was your favorite in the movie? You have was there a particular one that stands out? I mean, I know there's so much detail in that in that market scene.
There was so much to enjoy. I really am looking forward to seeing this a second time to sort of get a sense of the full palette, you know, the full effect of everything he used. But definitely would be probably a movie I'd get on DVD just to see the spectacle, as I keep calling it. As for favorite creature effect, you know, I really enjoyed the scenes with the troll that Hellboy does battle with. I thought those were a lot of fun. And just the general, I love all the little steampunk elements that crop up in both movies from time to time. Obviously,
you know what I loved about it was, obviously, if any weird idea jumped into their heads during the making of this, it was encouraged. Which, you know, I mean, it was not, nothing was stomped on, because, I mean, literally, there's one guy in the marketplace that they meet in passing that has a cathedral growing out of his head.
Yeah.
A literal cathedral, complete with lights and the stained glass and everything. It's obviously meant to be part of his biological head. I mean, it's just weird stuff like that. And, I mean, you just don't see that in most movies, but anyway.
Yeah.
That's
there are a few other
sounds great. Well, one thing I want to check with you on, Tobias, since we talked about it last week and we were kind of reviewing all the cool superhero movies this summer. Did you see Hancock? And what did you think of that?
I have not seen Hancock. I have not seen Hancock yet. So I have no comment on it.
I think my favorite superhero movie so far, this, and if you include Hellboy and superhero films, I would, I'd guess probably my favorite so far is still Iron Man, but Hellboy was very good. Yeah,
it'd be really hard for me to pick. I've enjoyed all three.
Oh yeah,
we've had a fun comic book movie summer so far, that's for sure. Hancock is kind of the outlier, I think. If you guys get a chance to see that one, I think it probably had the potential to be the best, and it falls short a little bit. But we won't get back into Hancock since we talked about it last week. I'm very much looking forward to the X-Files movie coming out. Is that that's still a couple weeks away, I think.
And I'm also looking forward to The Mummy and the third Mummy movie and a bunch of others. I mean, we've got, like, this really good summer run, looks like.
And don't forget Batman. I think that's next weekend.
That's next weekend, right, yeah.
Yeah,
wow,
right.
I mean, that's quite a few superhero movies that all have the potential to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the summer of the superheroes, for sure. Well, we're coming up on another break. Tobias, we really appreciate you calling in, surprising us like this. It's great to hear from you, and we're looking forward to having you back to talk about Sly Mongoose here on have you on for a full show here before too long. When's the book coming out again?
August 19th. There's actually a book trailer on my website. If you go to tobiasbuckel.com/Sly Mongoose, telling people a little bit about what the book's about if they're interested.
Outstanding. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. And maybe sometime right around the 19th of August, Tobias, we'll have you back on the program, and we can talk a little further about this.
That would be great.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. It's great talking to you.
No problem. Thanks very much for having me aboard. Have a good night, guys.
Thanks,
you
Tobias.
Too.
Good night. All right.
Well, back-to-back surprise guests. I don't know. It's I don't know what we're going to do with the second half of the program, but this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Phil and Steven talking about various topics in the future. I, I can only hope, Stephen. I just want to know if the phone is ringing.
Oh man. Here we go. Sorry.
There is no phone ringing. Damn it!
Okay, that was...
I talked over that a little bit. Let's try that one more time. So I just wondered if the phone is ringing.
All right.
There is no phone ringing, damn it!
Okay. That is Charlton Heston, and I think that's in Omega Man, where he completely wigs out in Omega Man. So, at any rate.
What did he actually say?
There is no phone ringing, damn it.
Oh.
And, of course, in the background, you hear a phone ringing. I don't know.
Yeah, it's audio. I needed subtitles on that one. I heard phone ringing, but I wasn't sure about the rest of it.
Anyway, so...
I'm upset with it. Sorry, man. There's nobody we admire more than you, Charlton, so, you know, didn't mean to...
Thanks a lot, you cheating bastard.
I'm sorry. I gotta give Heston a break tonight. But you're right.
Yeah, what an attitude, Gage. Chuck, we're gonna have you on the show when you're in a better mood. Okay, man, that's all there is to it. You do not get to be our surprise guest tonight. So
yeah, that's right.
So that was fun. That was fun. Two surprise guests back to back. We've never done that before. So that was pretty cool. And now we're gonna talk a little bit about. I believe. Well, actually, we're a segment behind. So, do we go ahead with the energy stuff?
Yeah, let's go ahead and kick off the stuff about electric inevitability. I guess is what you were writing about earlier this week.
Well, actually, I had started out. I said maybe we want to talk a little bit about the Pickens plan.
Yeah, let me get into that just a little bit. Now, T. Boone Pickens, of course, he's famous as an oil guy from way back. He's now 80 years old, and I think he's been in energy probably 60 years. I think that's about when he got involved in the oil business originally. He is now involved in wind power, and his idea is simply this, that more than any other country, we have been blessed with wind as a resource. And the entire center of our country, basically from Texas going straight up to Canada, you know, we're talking east of the Rockies, just east of the Rockies. That entire area right there is just completely blessed with wind power, potential wind
right.
power that has not been harnessed at all. And there's a community called Sweetwater in Texas. That's the name of the town where they have they've really poured the these huge windmills into this area, and it produces an unreal amount of electricity. And the cool thing about this is that it is right in the center of our country. We can make this power right in the center of our country and ship it to the West Coast or ship it to the East. And so it's a real resource, and he's really pushing it. And his idea is that we do this, and then we can, by doing that, we can replace the electricity that is produced by natural gas and then use the natural gas as transportation fuel. It's a clean burning fuel. It could be, and we make it right here, you know, we get it right here in our country and displace that much petroleum that we have to buy from overseas. And his concern is that we're buying so much that overseas that it's beginning to it could potentially bankrupt our country as foreign countries get rich on us buying their oil, and then they potentially buying our industries. And I can see his concern with that. We used to have an energy surplus in this country. Now obviously we're having to buy more and more and more of our energy. And if we can...
Yeah, well, he talks about the fact that we're spending about $700 billion, is that right, $700 billion a year on imported oil.
That's right.
And if we were to do what he says, if we were to generate power for the grid from wind, take the natural gas that we're currently using to generate that power and fuel vehicles with it, that would save us about $300 billion out of that $700 billion a year going to other countries. You know, it's a matter of making better use of resources that we already have. Because yeah, you look at that map he shows, we're kind of the Saudi Arabia of wind.
That's right.
Me like it. If
we're the Saudi Arabia in a lot of ways. We have a lot of blessings that we've not really tapped into. Wind.
Well, yeah, we're the Saudi Arabia of shale, right?
And we're the Saudi Arabia of coal, and we could be the Saudi Arabia of nuclear power if we wanted to be.
Right.
So it's just all these things have not been used primarily because oil has been so cheap. I mean, you pump it out of the ground, it's just about ready to use. And there's not been anything that could really compete with that on the basis of price. Well, now that the price has gone up and up, it's going to get where more and more alternatives can compete, and then we develop them, and that's the way that works. So, yeah, I think wind is going to be a huge player. And I think that electricity, as far as our transportation fuel, is going to be more and more important. And that's
well, I
part
think
of
so
it.
Too. And that
was part of what you were writing about, wasn't it?
Yeah, that leads to the piece I put up about what I first cleverly disguised using PaintShop Pro as the Eero truck. This amazing vehicle that goes 100 miles on about $3 worth of electricity. If you charge it up off peak, it's pure electric. It uses these lithium batteries to run it. The actual brand name of it is the Zero Truck, and it's actually just an Isuzu truck that has been modified to run off these lithium batteries. But I got to doing the math on that. I was thinking about that. Wow, that's pretty cool, you know, that they can deliver their freight, you know, anywhere up to 50 miles away, and then they drive back, and they've done it all on electricity. They recharge the truck overnight, and they're ready to make the next run the next day. But I got to thinking about that $3. That started going around in my head, and I thought, well, how much am I paying to go 100 miles, right?
A lot
and
more.
I've got a pretty fuel-efficient car. I drive a Subaru Impreza, and I did a little math on this. I think I get anywhere from 22 to 32 miles per gallon, depending. If I'm driving around Denver in traffic, it's going to go down. It's going to be closer to 22. If I'm just out on the highway heading up to Boulder, it moves up into the 30s. But split the difference. Call it 25 miles an hour. Gas has been anywhere from, in the last couple weeks, I've paid anywhere from $3.90 to $4.35 a gallon. So I'm just going to round that off. Call it $4. So I'm paying $4 for every 25 miles I drive. If I drive 100 miles, I'm paying $16. And I'm not hauling any freight, okay?
And I tell you, their vehicle is not anywhere nearly as aerodynamic as yours. I mean, that thing's like
exactly.
Driving a box.
A big boxy-looking truck, and it's full of stuff. You know, I mean, it's got to weigh quite a bit. And you think, well, you can drive that thing 100 miles for $3. That tells me, okay, that all of the alternatives we're looking for, and I think they're all great. I'm not opposed to any of them. I think we should drill offshore and even in a responsible way in Anwar. I got no problem with that. You know, I think we should start crunching up shale if that's going to work for us. If we want to convert coal to methanol, good idea. Convert trash or crop waste. I'm not so big on food, but trash or crop waste to ethanol. And burn either methanol or ethanol in flex fuel vehicles. I think that's a great idea. You know, if we're going to take algae and make diesel from that, I think that's an awesome idea. Or this bacteria I was reading about a couple weeks ago that excretes crude oil, turn that into
diesel, exciting,
gasoline.
That's exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are all cool ideas. You know, you got cars that can run off used French fry grease. We saw a thing last week about converting atmospheric CO2 into gasoline. These are all fantastic ideas, and I am in favor of pursuing all of them as enthusiastically as possible. But I can't help but think that where automotive transportation has got to really be going is away from liquid fuel. And it's because of the math behind this Eero truck versus the Subaru Impreza. You know,
I read an article this afternoon, Phil, that would give us more reason to believe that. Okay.
Okay.
The name of the article is Our Electric Future, and it's written by Andy Grove, who is a former CEO of Intel, okay? I found a link on Instapundit, and I'll have the link in our show notes after the show. Part of his thinking is that if we can run everything, including our cars, on electricity, that's the ultimate flex fuel. Electricity is the ultimate flex fuel. And why is that? Because we can make electricity using any other kind of fuel.
Exactly.
You know, basically, you boil water, and which pushes a steam turbine, and that makes electricity. That's generally the way you make electricity, regardless of what you're burning. You burn coal, natural gas, nuclear, geothermal, solar, I guess, yeah, solar, and even petroleum. All of those methods of making electricity, I guess the only exception would be hydroelectric. That makes electricity by just pushing the turbine without making steam. But anyway, all of those.
Well, and wind yeah. makes electricity. Just yeah, I mean
yeah, the same way. But yeah. Generally, that's what you're doing. And so, you know, the idea is that, you know, if we've got a gas guzzler in the garage, and OPEC cuts off petroleum, then you're staying at home. Okay.
Right.
But if you have an electric vehicle in the garage and they cut off petroleum, then you know, maybe your electricity might go up slightly in the margins, but then some other form of electricity then, you know, pushes into the picture. And so what you've created then is a situation where petroleum is just another commodity that competes with all these other commodities. If we are driving around in electric cars, and, you know, our lives cannot be controlled by, you know, one person holding that, you know, a majority of a certain resource in the world. And so, yeah, I think for that
exactly,
reason.
Exactly, because there's just so many different ways to produce electricity.
That's right. And so I guess the limiting factors, there's a number of things. But it seems like the end may be in sight, because the batteries that have been lacking all these years, it seems like we're getting closer and closer to having something that would actually work, and that's at this point it looks like it might be lithium-ion batteries. But I mean, they've also been developing supercapacitors that could potentially be a competitor of lithium-ion batteries. I mean, there's lots of different things that are potentials, and so it's exciting.
What we need is we need the batteries to be a couple or three times better than they are right now, which is, you know, it's a big step, but it's
hold more electricity, charge faster. Yeah.
Yeah. Considering how far we've come, it's not that far, and we need to be able to do a quick charge. You know, those are the two things. We need to either have some quick way of swapping them out or quick way of juicing them up. Because
that's right.
We're used to pulling up to a pump and 5 minutes later your tank is full.
That's right.
So somehow we need to be able to, within a window approximate to that 5 minutes, be able to get the electrical charge going. And maybe in the end batteries don't end up being the storage mechanism for electricity. Electricity is still the driver, but we may end up with hydrogen fuel cells that are storing that electrical power. There's a number of different ways to do it. Right now, I would say the smart money is on improved battery technology, though, because it seems to me that considering how far we've come and how far we need to go, we're really closing in on it.
Right.
And the story about the truck was actually in Popular Mechanics. It was right next to I had actually followed a link from another story. I don't know if you saw this. This was also on Instapundit about a electric-powered dirt bike.
Yeah, yeah. I read that straight from the magazine, the paper magazine, a couple of months back. Very, very cool. Very cool.
The
torque on those things apparently is amazing. You see these guys flying through the air on these dirt bikes that are completely silent. It's a very eerie sight, you know. You know, it has all the power and torque, or even more so than a gas-powered dirt bike. Amazing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, if you've ever watched motocross, I mean, that's the two defining things are these bikes grabbing the sky, right? Awesome leaps and things that they do, and that sound, you know, that's just always there. You know, I mean, it's always there. And to think to have the capability to be able to ride around like that and not to have it make that noise, that just really sounds like it sounds like a lot of fun. I think the guy writing the article said it was more like riding a big mountain bike,
yeah,
than it was riding a dirt bike. Just you know, the feeling of it being quiet just really made a huge difference. He was actually able to interview this other guy while they were both on these bikes. He said, try doing that with a regular gas power.
What? What? Yeah.
I think
they're better know sign language or something.
Yeah, exactly. I think there are going to be advantages to this electric-powered economy of vehicles that haven't even occurred to us yet. I think rapid acceleration is another one. The quiet factor is another one. The clean factor. There's a lot of these advantages working together. And when you couple that with the economics, it seems likely to me that's really where we've got to be going with how we get around. And
I worry though about silent motorcycles on the road though. You know, I mean, the motorcycles tend to be invisible to drivers and cars anyway.
Right.
You know, imagine somebody sitting in your blind spot on a motorcycle that's silent. You know, you merge and you kill that person because you didn't hear them at all.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I'm counting on, this is that's the Harley Davidson argument, right?
Yeah.
They're the safest bikes of all because
you're going to hear them. Yeah.
Yeah. When there's one of those anywhere in your vicinity. But of course, the other technological breakthrough that I'm looking forward to is a full blown, reliable tactical display on my dashboard, so that I don't have to worry about my blind spot. I don't have to worry about hearing anybody. I can always look, and I'll always get a good, accurate readout of who's behind me, who's beside me, the whole thing. And I think that's a technological. That's at a different level and on a different square on Spock's chessboard, but I think we'll see that coming along too. And so our quiet cars and the quiet motorcycles will all be much safer because of that. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. This is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Phil and Steven talking about various topics about the future. If you'd like to join us, you can give us a call at 347-215-8972 or take over in the chat room. I've tried to throw a few comments out there, but I can't walk and chew gum. What can I tell you? I'm not good at this. But Matt's there, and I see a few of our friends are in the chat room this evening. So sorry, Michael didn't make it. Yeah, Harv's there. Speaking of Harvey, I got an email just before the program started. I wanted to announce, if for anyone who's been following Harvey's videos, his video has actually been featured on Queen Rania of Jordan's site now, and CNN did a story on the fact that she's doing these videos, and a little snippet from one of Harvey's videos has now been shown on CNN. So congrats to you on that, Harvey. We're very proud of you as one of our chat room regulars that your work is getting this well-deserved exposure and attention.
That's right. You know, speaking again about energy, I noticed that David Goebel, who's been a guest on Fast Forward Radio, commented to your blog post. Phil, did you see that?
I did, yeah. Dave's a good friend. He's one of the co-founders of the Methuselah Mouse Prize, and he'd made an interesting comment. He talked about how another great way to save money on traveling is to telecommute, which I couldn't agree more, actually. I work from home at every opportunity that I can. And that has got to be the best way, not only to save energy, but to save time.
Yeah.
You know, when I drive up to the Boulder office, that's 90 minutes out of my day going there, and 90, you know, that's 3 hours out of my day lost from being productive or from spending time with my family or anything else. So I think that there are tremendous advantages to virtual presence. I mean, imagine if you and I had to physically get together every time we did this program. How many times would we have done it?
Twice.
Yeah.
Because <Yeah. laughs> Phil, I mean, you and I have met twice. I mean, physically. I mean, in the same place at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. So we would have done it twice. I mean, there's just a huge economy of scale associated with telecommuting, and I think that's what Dave was getting at.
Yeah, I agree, and there are some jobs. I was laughing as I thought about, you know, what are the jobs that you just can't telecommute and do? Well, surgeon, farmer, auto mechanic, concert violinist. But you know, I got to thinking as I made my list, I started scratching things off. There, you know, I've seen like some television program on the Discovery Channel or something showing a surgeon using telepresence with a robot. He literally would put his hands into this machine at his hospital, and like half a world away, some robot would be operating on somebody that would be perfectly mimicking his moves with you know, robotically. You know, I suppose an auto mechanic could do the same thing if necessary, or you know, there's it's you know, as technology advances, the list of things that you have to be present to do would shrink.
Well, you think about the concert violinist. That's interesting. If you've got a very precise robot mimicking this guy's actions, he could be faking it in one place, and the robot could be performing the music elsewhere.
Right.
But somehow you wouldn't really feel like you were seeing the concert violinist in that case, right?
I mean, I mean, I guess the best thing that you could do, if you're not going to have the guy in the room, is to probably get your Blu-ray player. and have a Blu-ray disc and play him through your hi-fi, and you know, you could see him in high definition and hear him, and that's probably about as good a telepresence that the concert violinist could do.
It seems to me that's the closest. But you know what's interesting? You think about that, because we've talked a while back about a robot that could play the violin anyway. They're
right.
Programming them to do that. You think about the robot that's performing the surgery or doing the auto mechanical work. You know, you put enough smarts in the robot, and then you don't even need to telecommute anymore, right? You're just
right.
out of a job.
Yeah, that's right.
you've got the robot doing it.
That's right. that person's got to find something else to do, I guess. Right.
Exactly. So, and that'll be another great way to save energy when we don't any of us have to do our jobs, because the robots will be doing them for us, and then you and I, Stephen, will be on this program, what, I guess 6-7 hours every day.
That's right. This will be our job when there's no other job left.
Yeah, the robots will be doing other stuff for us until they start doing this, and then I don't know what we're going to do. I'm going to go over to GameTap and play Q-Bert, I guess, at that point.
Or something, yeah.
that'll be where I go.
Go hang out with Pete.
I wanted to shift gears just a little here, because we've got a couple of interesting science stories that I wanted to bring out tonight. So I thought we might have a quick check into the world of science.
Astounding science facts.
Oh, I love that whale song. Yeah. So, well, I've got two astounding science facts for us this evening. The first is I don't know if you followed either of the links that I sent out before the program, Stephen, but the first one sounds really devastating. The headline is Jupiter's third red spot destroyed. And,
okay.
I had written on the Speculist probably about a month ago about how, as we all know, Jupiter is famous. The planet Jupiter is famous for having this big red spot on it. It's
yeah.
been there for hundreds of years. It's been identified as a storm system. But for as long as people have been looking at Jupiter, that spot has been there. And then, interestingly, a while back, a second spot appeared, and then a third spot appeared. And suddenly Jupiter, which was famous for having one red spot, all of a sudden had three big red spots on it. And it was this kind of, wow, now, you know, we'll have to talk about each one separately, or, you know, how are we ever going to keep straight which one is which? Because if they keep moving around, it's like, you know, Jupiter's playing three-card Monty on us. Will we even know which is the original big red spot? And it was this kind of, the face of the planet. It's kind of like if Saturn started messing with its rings, right? It's almost at that level. I mean, you know, this planet is known for the red spot, and now suddenly it's grown two more, and all is confusion. Well, it turns out that the planet Jupiter does spin off additional storm systems from time to time, or I should say they start up from time to time. But you know what always happens to all those storms?
What's that?
They get swallowed up by the big one.
Okay.
So inevitably, these smaller storm systems, either they dissipate if they're really small, but if they become red, if they become big red ones like the big red spot, eventually they're going to run into the big red spot and it just eats it. And so there were three, and then there were two, and now there's one once again, the big red spot, the original big red spot, and it just owns that planet. So nobody need worry. there is one red spot on Jupiter for the foreseeable future, and if others come along, it's likely to destroy them. So,
well, you know, and I heard an explanation, and I have not. It didn't stick for whatever reason. But there, it's apparently it's understood why this storm rages on and on without end on Jupiter, whereas, say, a hurricane on our planet, it runs its course and it's done, it might just be simply the vast size of the planet, but it was more technical than that. At any rate, I guess I'll have to look it up and put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, well, that storm system is kind of like our jet stream, right? It's just a permanent feature of the atmosphere of Jupiter. It's just something that everything else being set up the way it is, you got that storm on Jupiter. Just like everything else being set up the way it is, you've got these winds on this planet. It's just apparently permanent feature of the planet, or if not permanent, certainly a very long-lasting feature of the planet.
Yeah, interesting.
So, and back to normal now. I think that was the important thing. They were actually talking. One of the interesting things about that was, why was there so much more additional storm activity on Jupiter? Apparently, because the planet's been warming up quite a bit, and we've talked about how global warming on Earth seems to be mimicked by solar warming elsewhere in the solar system, on Mars and on I believe Pluto. In addition to on Jupiter, there has been a measurable increase in temperature, and there's a thought that might have more to do with the sun than it does with all those big SUVs they're driving around on Jupiter. But
yeah,
that hasn't been
we haven't verified the absence of our presence of SUVs has not been verified yet on Jupiter. So we'll just have to
exactly
see.
Yeah. Yeah, although you can't make too much of that, because you figure if we're studying the temperatures on the different planets at any one time, about half of them should be getting warmer and about half of them should be getting cooler. So the fact that a few of them are getting warmer doesn't necessarily mean that, oh, it's a solar system-wide trend, but it could be. And it's an interesting thing to ponder. Speaking of interesting things to ponder, our second story here on Astounding Science Facts this evening, I'm going to read you the headline. Stephen, I want to get your response.
Okay.
Science Daily News, Science News: children are naturally prone to be empathic and moral.
As a father of four, I find that a little bit humorous. I think children are, I think that children are naturally prone to be selfish, basically, I guess is the best way of putting it.
Well, this is one of those things.
Being empathic or empathetic is, I think, sometimes a learned behavior. But anyway, go ahead, Phil. I'm sorry.
Well, that's my take. I mean, I read this and I go, well, hang on. And it sounds like something that it was a very popular idea in the 70s. You know,
yeah.
Oh, all this selfishness and violence, this is all learned behavior. And really, human beings left to themselves are naturally good. You know, and I'm thinking, yeah, especially with children. That's why I'm sure as a father, you've often had to say, now, son, you're sharing your toys again. Stop that.
You're doing it entirely too much. You got to watch out. Yeah.
Yeah. Stop sharing your toys and go over there and smack your brother upside the head. Right.
That's right. I have to counsel him every day to do that.
Yeah. I mean, those are learned behaviors that people have to give to their children. Right. I never could buy that. But actually, what it's saying is that children between the ages of 7 and 12 appear to be naturally inclined to feel empathy for others in pain, according to researchers at the University of Chicago, who used functional MRI scans to study the responses in children. So basically, if you show a kid a picture of somebody stubbing their toe, it fires the neurons in the brain that if they had stubbed their own toe.
Right.
Or if you show them a picture of somebody stepping on their foot. I don't know why they were all like people getting their feet hurt, but those were the pictures shown in the article. And
right.
When you put it that way, I think, well, I'm not surprised at all, because, you know, obviously, I think at a very young age, children are sensitive to the fact that others around them might be suffering, that and they don't want to see that happening.
Right. Yeah, and maybe 7 to 12 is too late. You know, I mean, if their point is that it's a natural thing and not a learned behavior, then they could have already learned it about that time. Empathy.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what those scanners show on a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
Right.
I've heard studies done about babies like within the hospital right after they're born. You take a quiet, calm baby and put it, and the baby's doing just fine. And then you put him in the nursery with the other babies that are crying, and then he starts crying, almost out of empathy for the other babies or whatever.
Or it could be that they're bothering him.
It could. It's hard to know at that age what that effect on a child that they start crying when they hear other babies crying. The truth is, I think we have the capacity for both, for being.
Yeah,
complete.
Well, I got a kick out of the headline, but it sounds to me like the research is sound, but not all that surprising when you consider the age group. I'd like to see some research on babies, on much younger children, and see if the empathy is kicking in, if it's really hardwired in, or is it something that people are learning. Well, I see by the time that we've actually come right up on our hour here. The time has just flown by with our
two surprise guests and everything else,
and all the fun stuff we had to talk about this evening. So what have we got going on wise this evening?
Okay, the band Chewy Marble makes a triumphant return tonight. The song is She Rocks, and we will have a link to this song if you like it and you want to download it or whatever. We'll have the link in our show notes along with links to the other things that we've talked about tonight.
Tobias's book trailer and everything else we talked about.
Everything else. And so, just come on by. Our website is www.blog.speculist.com.
All right. Well, thank you, Stephen. We'll look forward to listening to, You Rock, was it?
She Rocks.
She Rocks by Chewy Marble. And I want to thank once again our two special surprise guests, Soraya Yahya, my wife, and Tobias Buckel for joining us this evening. Thanks to our friends in the chat room. Don't know what happened with our chat host tonight. Hope everything's okay, Michael. We look forward to having you back next week. And we look forward to being with you all again on the next Fast Forward Radio. Good night.